Welcome to the Reflections on Leadership podcast with Carl Bimshaw.
Your adaptability and resilience skills. Do you struggle to adapt to new situations or challenges? Do you have difficulty making decisions in a timely manner? Do you have the inability to handle stress or pressure? These are a few symptoms of a leader's weakness around their adaptability and resilience skills. Left unchecked, they lead to delays and missed opportunities, build a lack of confidence in your leadership, and have a negative impact on team morale. Adaptability is the ability to adjust and respond to new and changing situations, challenges, and opportunities, while resilience refers to the ability to recover from setbacks, challenges, and adversity. Adaptability and resilience are crucial skills for leaders to navigate change, manage ambiguity, make effective decisions, and lead their teams through challenging times. Adaptable and resilient leaders are better equipped to handle unforeseen circumstances, take calculated risks, learn from mistakes, and inspire confidence in their team members. Let's take a quick assessment to evaluate your leadership adaptability and resilience skills. Rate your level of agreement with each statement, with 1 being strongly disagree and 5 being strongly agree. You enjoy trying new things and learning. You embrace change and remain positive in the face of uncertainty. You're able to quickly adapt to new situations and challenges. You're open-minded and flexible when it comes to different ideas and perspectives. You are able to stay focused and maintain perspective under pressure. You seek input and feedback from others to improve your decision-making. You have a network of resources and support to help you adapt to new situations and challenges. You are able to effectively manage stress and pressure in the workplace. You encourage a supportive work environment that promotes resilience among your team members. You regularly seek to develop your skills and stay up to date on industry trends and best practices. So tally up your score, and out of 50, how'd you do? If you scored low, say below 25, you may want to consider seeking training and coaching or support from mentors and colleagues. Practice mindfulness and stress reduction techniques. If you scored in middle of the road, well, of course, there's room for improvement. Continue some of the strategies we've talked about to further develop your skills. And if you scored high, say 35 or stronger, you do have strong adaptability and resilience skills, but continue to seek opportunities for growth and development to improve those skills. Make the effort to develop the flexibility and resilience you need to navigate change and adversity, including how to stay focused and maintain perspective under pressure. You can sign up for a free 3-part mini course called Adaptability and Resilience from Carl Bimshaw Consulting. There'll be a link in the show notes. In the meantime, keep advancing confidently in the direction of your dreams and help others along the way.
You want to be the best manager and leader you can be, but let's face it, it's exhausting. Some days you feel overwhelmed and you don't even know where to start. Did you know there's a way you can improve your leadership without spending a small fortune? With titles like How to Manage Change, Lead on Purpose, and the Sales Management Monthly Briefing, you'll get a better grasp on your leadership development. Choose from a collection of innovative journals or a series of practical guides with self-assessments, provocative questions, and clear instructions to help you take meaningful action. Use the leadership workbooks on your own or with your team at your own pace. You'll uncover new perspectives and get profound insights. Leadership workbooks are interactive, thought-provoking, and affordable. You'll want to get extra copies because they are a great leadership resource to have on hand for your organization. Check them out at leadershipworkbooks.com.
Subscribe to the Reflections on Leadership newsletter on LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening to the Reflections on Leadership podcast, produced by Carl Bimshaw Consulting, the leadership development and accountability firm that helps busy professionals to challenge, disrupt, and dramatically reduce the influence of lousy leadership in their business. Learn more at carlbimshawconsulting.com. Manage better, lead well.
How bad could it be? Really? We don't want to whisper during this. So, Janina, what's the deal with accountability? And why do so many people think they need it?
I think it's attached to productivity, success. I think it's a perceived need.
I was with a group of business owners at a summit kind of thing, and I was keeping track. 25% of them felt that what they needed in the second quarter was accountability. And I was like, why do these people think that they need accountability? And I don't really have an answer for it, but I think fundamentally it's because people want to be seen or heard. Mm-hmm. And if you're a business owner or kind of doing your own thing, it can get very lonely and nobody notices what you're doing. And so it's very easy to not do stuff because nobody cares. Nobody's breathing down my neck.
Right.
And if you do stuff, you don't necessarily get the awards that in a corporate environment, like, oh, that's so great. They tied their shoes 3 days in a row, you know, something like that, right? And so I think a lot of accountability is just people want that connection to be seen and heard. And because nobody asks for accountability. Not nobody, but people don't. Here's what I was going to say. This part here we would edit normally. Here's what I found, because part of what I do is accountability partner. When I'm first talking with a client or prospective client, and they talk about what they need, I think, I just need somebody to kind of, like, you know, keep me on track, and, you know, I set these goals, but sometimes I drift, and I just need them to remind me of my goals, and, you know, just somebody to talk to and keep me on track. And I'll go, oh, so you mean like an accountability partner? And the women 100% say, yes, absolutely. That's mm-hmm. exactly what I need. And the men, pretty close to 100%. No, not that. Not an accountability partner. More like a strategic ally.
Okay. So they want to call it something different.
They want to call it something else, yeah. But they do not like the term accountability partner. So I found that when I first started this and first started offering sort of accountability to partnering, I was trying to figure out how to market it. And, like, men don't like to be labeled around accountability partner because I don't know whether it's machismo or, like, hey, I can handle this. Or I don't need help on this or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, of course, everybody does. But so their solution was to call it a strategic ally. And so when I'm brainstorming with a prospective client, if it's a woman, I say, so you mean like a accountability partner? Like, yes, exactly. And if it's a guy, and I say, so it's something like, I don't know, like a strategic ally? Yes, exactly. I'm like, oh, okay. Why do you think that is, Jimmy?
I just like the fact that people have different words for what they need to get the job done. You know, you said solos, they're doing the work by themselves. It is lonely. Maybe they do want to be seen. Maybe they do want some cred. Maybe they do want the pressure, quote unquote, mm-hmm. to, well, I told somebody I was going to do it. I guess I better do it because there's more chance of delivering mm-hmm. in that scenario than if they're just telling themselves.
Right. Yeah. Boy, there's a lot on accountability we could talk about. We could do a whole show on that. Now, what about... let's see. What's all this emotional intelligence stuff?
I like the word emotional. but as far as intelligence, you know, being smart about it, like, what is your definition of emotional intelligence?
Ooh, mine or the textbook, what people are saying? Because there is a,
well,
you know, I mean, it. Well, you know, there's money to be made off of emotional intelligence, so sure, there's a whole industry associated mm-hmm. with it. But I don't know. Fundamentally, though, it's about being a good person, right? And common sense and how to interact with people. And I have found, I mean, I'm giving it a short shift there, but emotional intelligence is essentially how are you interacting with other people, or are you throwing it a temper tantrum? You
know, mm.
In other words, when there's conflict, how do you deal with it? How are you doing things to avoid unnecessary conflict? Because not all conflict is bad, right? But are you doing it just to stir the pot, which is not necessarily an emotionally intelligent thing to do? Are you creating words and actions that are causing people to feel good about themselves, or are you debasing them a little bit?
So do we need an industry to teach us how to be a good human?
No, we don't need an industry to teach us how to lead either, but we got one.
Okay, right. So back to your question.
So, well, my question is why is there so much focus on it? But I think we know the answer. There's focus on it because there's a deficit of it, right?
Agreed.
We focus on the common sense and the, here's how to behave. And then again, this is going to depend on what it is. Oh, they weren't brought up right, right? They
yep. Yep.
Parents who didn't care or whatever, you can blame society or whatever, but it's just, people mm-hmm. need to be retrained constantly. We have a short memory.
Or is it permission? Well, I've taken this class. I, am this way now, at some emotional intelligence level. Does it give somebody permission to be kinder, permission to, interact with the...
But I kind of feel like people who feel like they need permission would be emotionally intelligent already, right? Like, in other words, if we just go from the basic... from a basic... do the field that much. Yeah, so I mean, I think people who are emotionally intelligent generally aren't looking for permission because they're just going to behave that way.
Right.
It's kind of like people who are, tell how old you are, whether you call it PC or woke or whatever, right?
Mm.
Those who are against that make fun of it or use that, like, oh, I'm not allowed to say that. But people who actually have it or have an understanding in the appropriate amount, whatever that means, don't have to get permission. And they're like, oh, is that PC for me to say? I mean, you just say it. Is that too woke? People who are emotionally intelligent don't use that kind of language.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about this. What is mindful leadership to you?
Is that the one I put it in? No.
I'm curious.
Mindful leadership. So mindful to me is giving thought to, paying attention to what you're doing, whatever it is. In terms of leadership, you're doing stuff on purpose. You're conscious of how you're interacting, things that you focus on, interacting with other people. I guess I don't know. Why add the word mindful? How does mindful leadership differ from leadership?
I'll let you know in a moment. So when I hear mindful, I tend to think about present, right? A lot of times if we're in the touchy-feely space and you're trying to be mindful, it's almost always about, from around meditation or something like that, or being mindful.
Mm-hmm.
It's be very present, be very in the moment, listen to everything that's going on around you without judgment, preferably, right? And that's the mindful, is you're just kind of letting things wash over you and you're aware of it all, but you're not saying it's good or bad, or you're not, there's no attachment to it. It's just sort of mindful of, like, oh, that's a door opening. There's, cars going by, all observing. That stuff. It's observing all that, and it's all present moment. It's not like, oh, I wonder where they're going, or why do they have to be so loud, or, you know, when's the next dog going to bark, or that kind of thing. That wouldn't be mindful. Mindful is very much, to me, mindful is just a fancy word for present.
Okay.
And so, but if leadership is supposed to be about vision setting, right, and to a certain extent, predicting the future or preparing for the future, what's the value of being mindful? Well, I think leaders have to be able to kind of do all of that, because what you want is your strategic thinking and all that is future based, but your actual tactical stuff, your interactions with people are very present. So if you're talking to people on your team, you know, and there's something going on, well, what's going on with them right now in this very moment? Because that's really all you can, not control, but can control or have any influence on, is this very moment, this snapshot. So I think mindful leadership, my interpretation on it, would be being very present onto what's going on right now. So, you know, if you got an employee who's off kilter a little bit, why are they off kilter, as opposed to, oh, they're always off kilter, or I wonder if they'll be off kilter today. See, it's a different mindset.
So the leader has at least two things that they're doing. It's the vision thing,
yeah.
It's the forward-thinking thing, and to execute to get there, it is the what's happening right now on the people who are doing it.
I mean, because the leadership, let's see, a couple ways of saying it. I mean, one, the whole point of leadership is to help other people win, right? But the idea being is if you as the leader are setting the vision, or, you know, here's what we want to achieve, so now that's your role as the leader. Now, how do I help people win? Meaning, how do I help us all get to that point? Then all of that is going to be a series of present moment activities. And so that's where your focus would have to be. And then you've got to step away and, like, are we closer or further away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think. But I don't know. We should do more research on that. Is there anything else you want to touch on? Leading with empathy, technology-driven leadership, workforces, collaborative kind of things. You could look at the notes too. Yeah.
Would you say that agile leadership has, I guess, how does agile leadership differ from mindful leadership?
I think it's a matter of marketing. See, I think if you look at what are leadership trends, or what leadership trends do I have to be aware of, indelibly? Can you not just mock me? Can you come up with the word? What's the word? Undoubtedly? Undoubtedly, that's the one.
Okay.
Agile leadership will come up. And so what's that mean? Well, it either means flexible or innovative, if not both, right? And so I constantly have this sort of argument about leadership and trends, because, like, there's not all that much new in leadership. It's kind of been the same for
two
to 5,000 years or so. You know, so I don't know why there has to be a new thing. On the other hand, you know, societies change and there's different needs and different, you know, we're not a bunch of little mini kingdoms running around. Or aren't we? Isn't every big company just a little mini kingdom in the modern age with their big towers and their serfs and their farming community and their real estate acquisition and all that kind of thing? So I don't know how much we've changed versus how much we stay the same. I think that's a big part of leadership, is kind of figuring out that balance. I would say we haven't changed that much, so that's why it's important to look at history. But I think, like, being agile, so being flexible and being innovative, is a constant. So that's why you'll always see it as a trend to think about, because why wouldn't it be? So there, now I only have to come up with four more trends.
I guess I'm interested in the, it's almost like these are adjectives. Right, agile or mindful or whatever the word is before leadership.
Right.
And I think you're saying, like, why isn't it just leadership? Right. Why is there...
Well, you've been saying that. I haven't been saying that. But yeah, I agree. Because for me, leadership is better when it's an adjective, not a noun, right? When it's, you know, it's the act of being. But leadership in our current world has two meanings. It's that, and then basically the study of it, or the industry, or the, you know, it's just the practice of leadership. And we won't go down that path just yet.
Okay.
Because that's just capitalizing on a need, right? But leadership is everywhere. People have it, and you can have it without going to school or spending a lot of money.
And then when you add ethical and sustainable to leadership.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because we all know that there are leaders who are not ethical, right? So you can certainly lead without being ethical. So it's not a requirement.
Right. Which would differentiate lousy from good.
Effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, in my definition, but somebody else's definition, maybe not. This is where we see the splintering of a lot of places, right? Like, what's up is down and what's down is up. So you would think, I don't know, insert news headline here, that everybody would understand that this is right or this is wrong.
Mm.
But not everybody does. So I think it's the same thing, like, you know, one I always think, you know, there should be situational leadership, not situational ethics. So, like, ethics is something that we, you know, pretty fundamentally, the majority and super majority, if you will, like 85-90% of society agrees this is good, this is bad. So we all have agreement on that. And then situational leadership is more like, how are you going to act
in
the different situations based on, you know, sometimes you have to be, you know, hard driving, and maybe people aren't going to like your decisions, but you moved us forward. And other times you're more democratic, like, hey, what do you think? What do you think? And you're more collaborative and all that. And it's going to depend on the needs. But the ethics shouldn't be situational. Unless you're Machiavelli.
I think, you know, what's possible with all of these words in front of leadership, didn't notice it until now, collaborative, servant, authoritarian, you know, are they a thing? What differentiates these from each other, and why is it important to note?
Because it makes you feel good. I mean, look, there are different leadership styles, but, like, if you Google it, you could come up with, like, there's 16 different leadership styles or 32 different leadership styles or whatever. But, you know, there's kind of, like, maybe a core four or five.
I was going to say, like, in any job description or in any bio that, you know, some leader has, like, do they reference a specific leadership?
Well, think about it. Let's brainstorm for a second. What type of leaders could you label or think of? Like, if you were to put your adjectives or formal adjectives in front of them, what have you heard or what do you know? See, none come to mind. So for most people, it doesn't matter. Leadership is leadership. You're either good or bad. And that's going to be very personal, right? It's going to be about, you know, I like my boss, I don't like my boss, right? Or I like, you know, my representative, or I don't like my representative, right? So it's all very, very focused on self to one extent, but there are different types of leadership styles. And people do tend to gravitate toward one or another based on a lot of different factors. But to me, the continuum of it, if you come up with all, so like there's transactional leadership, there's transformative leadership, there's situational leadership, there's servant leadership, there's authoritarian leadership, there's laissez-faire, did I say it right? Who knows? Leadership. And so those are all different types of styles, and what that is, and there's...
Oh, well, that's...
We'll try it.
gonna get cut.
Ooh, diets.
All right. Everybody.
So there are all different types of leadership. But who cares? Well, you care depending upon what results you want, right? So somebody who's like a much more relaxed, you might find this in like certain segments of like, say, the fashion industry or something like that, where it's just, hey, just do what you need to do. You're all professionals, you know, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's called country club leadership too, where it's like, hey, you know, you're experts, you know what you're doing, figure it out, you know, and the figurehead shows up every once in a while and says, yeah, that's great.
Okay.
And that can work in a very creative environment. But it also can cause chaos because, like, nobody, you know, where, you know, what do? You know, they fight over parking spaces or, you know, who's brought in the donuts this week or something like that because there was no rules, no structure. It's just habit and do whatever. You're all self-sufficient. I trust you all. So there's no direction either.
Right.
It's all self-directed. And, you know, that can be in the fashion industry. That could be in labs, too. And yet, without structure, you have chaos, right? So that's the downside of it.
So when somebody, like, comes to you for, they're a leader,
mm-hmm.
and they have a situation, they have a problem, like, you're going to help them with, does it matter what they say, or do you start to unpack and uncover what type of leader they are, or what type of leader they want to be?
Yeah.
Or is this going in a totally different direction?
No, so yes to all of that. So either, I think, well, I know, I ask them, like, do you know what kind of leader you are?
Mm.
More often than not, they don't know because they haven't studied it, per se, so they don't have a name for it. But then I'll call it what I'm seeing. Like, well, you seem to be more, you know, aspirational, for example. You want to be a transformational leader. So, like, there's a bunch of stuff you want to do and bring about, and you have these big goals, right? And other people are more transactional because they might be talking about an employee they have, and they use language like a carrot or a stick or something like that. You know, so I can diagnose what I think kind of leader they are, and so then I just test with them, are you this, and do you want to be that? But one of the things I was going to say is, like, if you really simplify it, I think there's a continuum of leadership, and back to self-serving versus serving others is kind of the continuum, right? And so on one end, you'd have, like, basically a servant leader, which, depending upon your point of view, gets maligned a lot. But a servant leader is more like, okay, we've set the direction and all this stuff. Now, how do I help you win? How do I work with you? And so it's all about the team and others and helping others win.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not afraid to roll up their sleeves and help people out and do whatever it takes. Doesn't mean they're doing the work for them necessarily, although in some instances it could mean that, but it's more like, I'm here for you. The leader is there for those who they lead. To the other extreme, which is authoritarian, which is all about control, and it's got to be this way, and this is how I want it. And there are times and places for that, but usually not very many good ones.
Mm.
You know, I mean, if you're caught in a building on fire, you want somebody in authority to say, go to the left, as opposed to,
right.
Hey, well, let's ideate on this for a moment, you know. And so all the other ones kind of fall in that spectrum somewhere around more control versus less control. I mean, for me, and my bias is on the servant leadership side, and the more vulnerable you are, the more you delegate, the more control you give up, the more powerful and influential you are. When you're authoritarian, it's about you. You have a tighter circle. You don't trust as many people. You can be very effective for a short period of time because you have brute force on your side, but it just doesn't, people don't feel good. People don't generally like it. And so how effective is it?
Right. And would you say that maybe decades ago that would have worked out, but maybe today not so much?
Seems to be working out pretty well in a bunch of states. I think authoritarian. Here's why authoritarian leadership works, because there's a good chunk of the population that doesn't want to think and have control. Just tell me. Just point me in the right direction. I don't, you know. But so those who don't, there are those who like rules, and so therefore it's kind of. It's
here.
A.
Art. Oh, yeah,
I feel like our cafe would have more space because there's only a small table here.
Yeah.
Wait,
go.
And there's like so many of us.
It's a little bit like
I don't think
a let's see, lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
We were talking about there's some states that.
Oh, yeah. So people who like authoritarianism don't, and I don't necessarily mean this in a disparaging way, but don't want to be thinking for themselves because they're busy. They're doing other things. They're working on a lot of stuff and like and
this
maybe
just one more thing.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of insecurity on that. It's like, hey, that's above my pay grade. You don't pay me enough to make those decisions. I don't care about that. And so people who people who are busy don't mind authoritarian. Like, let somebody else do it because they're basically abdicating or giving away.
Right.
You know, their 2 cents. Also. Mostly an authoritarian is going to be more like on a populist side and going to be more like promise you things that you would want anyway. So why wouldn't I follow you? Hey, if you can do it and I don't have to be involved, great. So that's why that is just as attractive nowadays too, because people are stressed out and they don't want to think. And depending upon your persuasion, things aren't going my way. Everything's been against me. Nobody's called me pretty lately, but this guy thinks I'm gorgeous. So
do you find that when a leader is mindful or agile or not authoritarian and they have people who want to be told what to do, how do they lead that group?
They just tell them what to do.
So the leader will step into the authoritarian. If they're not that way to begin with.
Oh, if they're not, well, if they're not that way to
begin
with.
And they have a team that's not responding.
Yeah,
not taking the, if the team is not.
Responding to the authoritarian?
No.
Okay.
The opposite. If the team is not responding because they're waiting to be told, but the leader is not authoritarian.
Right.
Like,
yeah. So where that, so like a baby, this isn't right, so I won't say that. Baby authoritarian would be transactional, but that's not right. So a transactional leader is what a lot of people grow up with thinking leadership is. It's all about carrot or stick. So
it's all about what?
It's about carrot and stick. So the punishment and reward. And so leadership is all about, here, if you guys hit these numbers, there's a big bonus for you. Anybody who can do this gets these steak knives, you know, that kind of thing. That's the stick. And if you fail, you lose your job, right? So a lot of sales teams are run based on transactional leadership, because it's like, if you do well, you get rewarded. If you don't do well, you get punished. And a lot of people think that that's good leadership. And because it's very simple direction, you do this, good things happen. You do this, bad things happen. And that works. Because if you incentivize somebody in the way that they want to be incentivized, they will do the thing you want them to do. It has a very short shelf life, though. It doesn't, because people don't really want that. They want that for that, because I want the gift or that bonus or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But then over the long haul, it just becomes a drain and it's useless and I don't like it, which is why sales teams frequently also have a lot of churn, because it's like, I don't want to put up with this. So in your example, people will put up with it as long as they get something from it. But if you're in a team and like, well, no, so you're kind of backing off a little bit. So like if I'm going to tell people how to become an authoritarian. So if I'm an authoritarian, but nobody's listening, then I'm probably not harsh enough. Probably, right? Or I'm not promising enough. But if I want to step back on that, I might be more, how do I experiment with that? Well, with transactional stuff. So in other words, hey, if you do this, and maybe it's just time, like I, you know, because they don't want to be told what to do, but they like being in the executive suites with the leader. So the authoritarian leader will say, come on by, look at the view in this office. You know, this office could be yours someday. And now I'm kind of teasing them with the future, what they could do if they would just.
So it's playing a little bit with cost and benefit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
And you can get far more people on that. People who are like, oh, I'll never follow authoritarian. Well, if I give you rewards, you will. Or if I punish you, and it hurts, you will.
Or not, because...
Or not, because you...
Quit.
Yeah. But, you know, and that's why they an authoritarian leader will prey on people who don't have the option. So, in other words, this is why...
Or don't act like they have the option.
For example, this is why company towns are not a great idea, where because you have no choice. So, if a company comes up, right, and there aren't any choices, and like, you know, oh, I, you know, why would I quit? You know, I can't quit. There's no place to go, right? Or, you know, a bunch of entry-level jobs or low-wage jobs, things like that. Well, this is all I can do. I'm working 3 jobs already. This one gives me the best pay. I got to stay here, right? And so... that's music to authoritarians' ears, whether they know it or not, because authoritarian fundamentally is all about control. And so, if you don't have any choices, I'm your only choice.
Right.
So I can either wear you down, or you'd be a troublemaker anyway, and so you're now the enemy. And so now I can get other people against you. And therefore, you'll be diminished, and I'll be grander for it. Or you're just out of, you know, I don't need you anyway. You're useless. Nice, you're useless to me.
You're saying you're going to be jealous that you don't get anything. But you probably just let other people get stuff, too.
I mean, the environment I came from was definitely a lot of that. Mm-hmm. That they were the, what'd you call it, the community company.
Oh, company town?
Company town.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a lot of people that I talked to that said, I've got to stay.
Yeah.
I've got to put up with this. I can't move my kids.
Right.
I'm living to my... This means I, you know, I can't do anything else.
Yeah. Where else would I go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe there was an authoritarian. Wow. Authoritarian leader, or maybe it was just the mindset of the team, the people.
Yeah, or it could be both. I mean, one does tend to create the other. I mean, I'm generally in that school of thought too, is that, you know, the team creates the leader more than the leader creates the team. So if you're it's like culture always wins, right? So if you've got a team that has a particular way of thinking, they're going to
either work with or snuff out.
Right, yeah. Because think about, I don't know, there's so many examples, but none come to mind offhand. But you think about like a department in a company that's been, they've all been there for 10, 15 years or something like that, right? So the department's there, but they've had 6 or 7 different leaders. Right, because maybe it's a promotion step or something like that, but that's where people go to either improve or ship out, right?
Mm-hmm,
so it's
mm-hmm.
a, you know, it's the management version of pip or ship, where you put this manager on performance, and if they can have this team perform, then they get to stay, and if they don't, they go, and they're going to go because the team is going to be the team. They don't need the leader because they've created the leader.
Okay.
All right. Well, we got enough stuff to think about.
There is a lot of stuff.
So maybe we'll do another long show sometime.
Well, I want to say... Okay.